We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game betting odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com to start winning.
To another edition, Dynasty Tradecast on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. I am your host this evening, Nathan Powell, or as the kids say, Nate Dogg. Week five is in the books, and I'm reunited with one Daniel Sanyo, saving me from what was arguably the worst podcast ever recorded last week.
It's hard to do anything like that alone, unless you've got a full, you know, full length movie written in front of you in order for you to read it and go down the do the business that way. So, yeah, some real life things going on, which unfortunately will always take precedent. I know you guys really want this podcast to matter. Unfortunately, real life took precedent. So happy to be back. Happy to kind of re-dive in. To be completely honest, I've kind of fully been away. I've caught very little action. To be honest, some of my lineups were like auto set, and I got screwed in Scott Fishbowl because it auto set Chris Carson for me, who was already out, even though I had submitted a lineup at one point, and then it resubmitted an auto lineup somehow with Chris Carson in it. So fun stuff.
All right, that'll do it. All right, so we're going to get into some interesting players from the week that was week five. And then we're going to play a little rookie or the vet, break down some rookies that so far this season, 5 weeks in. How are we valuing them against their veteran counterparts? Now, there was one man who took great offense to Dan's absence at last week's podcast, and he decided to have a career game to show him that he has been wrong for the last, you know, 18 months or however long Dan has been on his hate train for one Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney, the 20th overall pick in the NFL draft. Kadarius Toney, the draft capital king. Kadarius Toney, the guy who's been undervalued by the fantasy community. Kadarius Toney, 10 catches, 189 yards, along with a one carry for 7 yards. So he really got involved for the first time in week four against the Saints. He got 6 catches for 78 yards there. And it's like, oh, he's finally healthy. We're finally getting him involved, you know, with the mess that is the Giants offense. And Tony is showing that once he's involved, which he is now, he had 6 catches the week before, 10 catches this week. I'm not expecting 10 catches from Kadarius Tony every week, but Kadarius Tony is the, you know, carbon footprint of the Nathan Powell draft, the guy who is going later in fantasy than he did in the NFL draft. You know, chalk it up as another win for that category.
Oh, well, one game isn't going to be a win, Nathan. I quite literally saw one highlight of Kadarius Toney's 10 for 189 and 0 touchdown, whatever. The one highlight catch, which I think it was like a 40-yard catch or something. What have we talked about? He's got hands like feet. He bobbled a wide-open, however underthrown pass, and you shouldn't have to two-tap something that's put right into your breadbasket. Yeah, when you're going to get targets, you're going to do it. I even said he's great in space. If you can create something for him, great. Get him the ball. Let him do with, you know, what God gave him, which he's explosive. There's no denying that. The issue is the wide receiver traits and his ability to catch with a quarterback that is pretty inaccurate. You know, it's going to be one of those things. Now, this was a game that was pretty much garbage time from the first minute. He's going to be fed targets because Galladay's out, Shepard's out, Ingram's half dead. Darius Slayton doesn't matter. You know, they drafted him early. They're going to use him. I would expect volume, whether it's good volume or bad volume, doesn't really matter. But I'm far from considering it a W. Sure, he had a decent game with some yardage, but until I see him beat up on one of the high-end defenses or truly show that he's, you know, a big-time wide receiver and come up with big-time plays in a game that isn't a complete blowout, I'll feel differently. Now, is it possible he's Allen Robinson with Blake Bortles? Maybe. Maybe that's the move. However, I would say Allen Robinson, it fits the wide receiver mold better than whereas Tony is more your Swiss Army knife. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially with kind of how the NFL is now, with a lot of these guys being split out, undersized, you know, multiple running backs in sets, all sorts of different stuff. So there's definitely a place for a guy like Tony in the NFL. It just doesn't fit my mold as somebody I'm targeting as a true wide receiver, because to me, he's not a true wide receiver. He's an all around, just kind of, to be honest, he was a special teams player in my eyes as a returner, but you know, that's just what it is. He looked okay. He still doesn't look great, in my opinion.
Well, you know, 10 catches, it's like 5th career game. Pretty good for a special teamer, if I do say so myself. Just from a, I guess, dynasty view, how much do you think this game changes his price, if at all? Do you think that the naysayers like yourself aren't bumping him up? Do you think that and this is probably the most likely scenario, I got an offer for Kadarius Toney, and it was an instant reject. It was Kenny Galladay for Toney in a third. I'm like, why on earth would I take that? But is it just a case of the guys who have him are just going to make him more expensive? There's not going to be much movement on Toney?
It's most likely going to be that. There's going to be and they're going to be few and far in between, but there's going to be the owner that was drafting mid-second. Toney got there for, you know, because everybody else felt the way I did. And they're like, well, I mean, I can't take Elijah Mitchell at 205, so I'm just going to take Kadarius Toney. And now it's looking like a decent investment. I would maybe give it another week to see if he's going to put up another big number. Wait until Shepard and those guys are all back. I would assume at that point his workload will be reduced. And maybe their plan was just to kind of bring him along slowly and work him in, but obviously the injuries change that. So I would say that in most cases, in most leagues, the guy that wanted Toney drafted Toney, and most of the folks that didn't think he was very good or didn't want any interest in the New York Giants, they're probably just going to stay away. And even if the price increases, why are they going to go now and spend more than they feel he's worth? Just to have a share. I think the time to buy would have been probably after week 3. Even after last week, we saw a little bit of a boost in price. And now after the Dallas game, when everything worked towards Toney having a big game and he did produce in the role. So I think his price is probably going to get up into you know, he'll probably be pushing more of the higher end guys that aren't named Ja'Marr Chase in this class as far as price goes, if he has one more of those types of games, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. Now let's stay in the Northeast. You know, we don't often talk tight end, but when we do, it's because they are moving and they are shaking. And the man who is doing that is the tight end for Josh Allen, Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox is quietly putting together a very good tight end season. 8, 9.7, 14.9, 20.7, and 20.7. Scored a touchdown in each of the last four games, including two touchdowns against the Texans. Now, the most promising is the, you know, the big gains, the three catches for 117, the four catches for 49, you know, getting those bigger plays in that Bills offense. You know, the offense only seems to be getting better week after week. Manuel Sanders has been a huge piece for that Buffalo offense. Dawson Knox is a guy who I didn't think I'd be comfortable with my lineup in week five, week six, but now that's the case. I think he's quietly entering that tier of Mike Gesicki, Dallas Goedert, and even like among those guys, he might be the most startable today.
Yeah, it's very possible, especially when you look at Buffalo, that team's not going to be running the football very often. Even when they're ahead, they're still not running the football. They're going to take the short, easy throws, keep the clock moving, doing those kinds of things. That team is run through and through by Josh Allen. You know, he's doing what he does best, and that's throw the football. And then he uses his legs as well. So even going back to the kind of the last half of last year, maybe the last third of the season, Knox has been pretty successful when healthy. So there's no reason to believe that he isn't at the very least a high-end tight end two or a low-end tight end one. Moving forward, obviously, Stephon Diggs is still going to be your 1A there. Emmanuel Sanders, like I was pumping the gas on him in during the offseason as a potential big winner here, and he's shown that. This team seems to be run with Diggs, Sanders, and now Knox. So what was, you know, a significant number of targets going to guys like Cole Beasley, that has all kind of been transitioned to Dawson Knox, and some of the Diggs targets have been transitioned to Emmanuel Sanders. So they're spreading it out a little bit more and still kind of using guys in the same roles as what they're used to. That offense is built perfectly for the personnel that they have. You know, a little bit more balance would be nice, but it's working. So I do like Dawson Knox a bit more moving forward. A lot of people were on that train at the end of last year, and I was just like, I mean, that's kind of a one-trick pony in Buffalo. It's the Allen to Diggs connection, and that's it. And he's proven now that it's going to be more than that. And obviously, you know, the Beasley stuff from last year, this year, you know, whatever, we're kind of all moved off of that, and I think the Buffalo Bills are also even moved off of that.
Let's transition to Tampa Bay. We have an interesting one here. It's not like it's not developing news that Antonio Brown is a good wide receiver. It's not developing news that he's going to score fantasy points. What is kind of developing news is that he has dynasty value again. Like for the last, you know, 12, 18 months, he's been like, okay, he's a guy that you'd like to have on your team, be able to start. But it's not like a guy you would have traded like a late first or an early second for. That wasn't really coming into your mind at, you know, before this season. But now, you know, he's come off a huge 31.4 point week, but he scored at least 13 in three of his four games played, and he has two 20 plus point performances in his four games. Smaller sample size, but it looks like he's Brady's number one target in terms of like a target perspective in Tampa. I think that Antonio Brown is back to having legit dynasty value. A guy who, you know, if we were doing a startup today, you would consider him in the seventh, eighth round. Yes, he's 33 years old, but does he look like he's slowing down? I mean, yes, he's not 28-year-old Antonio Brown that was literally wrecking the league, but he's still looking pretty damn good.
I mean, at this point, I'd probably rather have him than Julio Jones if we're going to go the old wide receiver route. Yeah, you know, Tom clearly has sold his soul because he's looking better than he has ever looked. And the volume is there. You know, the one game that was kind of minimal volume, high efficiency was against Atlanta, a game that was well in hand early. And this offense, I mean, they're going to be throwing the ball a lot. They're not really built to run. You know, Leonard Fournette, Gio Bernard, Ronald Jones. It's not exactly the most scary backfield any defense has ever, you know, set their eyes on. So when you've got Tom Brady, you should always feel comfortable throwing the football. Brady's got 4 touchdowns or more in 3 of 5 games. The other 2 were tough defensive battles. So those are going to be kind of the ons and offs of A, the schedule, and B, how the Bucs play football. So, yeah, Antonio Brown most definitely has dynasty value. The big question here, in my opinion, is do you transition off of Brown and go try to buy Chris Godwin or Mike Evans a little bit cheaper, even though Evans is still big time producing. It seems the touchdowns are, when they're happening, I think it seems like they're happening 2 at a time. And Godwin's just kind of quietly being strung along. So maybe the move here is we go and buy Chris Godwin. Maybe we go see if Mike Evans is a little cheaper. If Antonio Brown keeps on his big pace, you know, these guys are all going to eat. It's just going to depend on who the defense covers better on any given game.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point. With Godwin, the reason why he'd be cheaper is the reason why I'm not, like, going out screaming trying to buy him. It's because I just don't know where the targets are going to be with Godwin. Godwin is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, but their receiving core is so good that, you know, Evans really has the red zone when Gronk isn't there. Antonio Brown has the deep ball. Like, basically, Godwin is the intermediate route on third down, and how much is that role producing versus the deep threat and the red zone? Those two roles are a lot more, you know, fruitful from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, and you know, week 1, it looked like it was Godwin's season. 13 targets, 9 catches, 105, and a touchdown. Since then, he hasn't topped 74 yards. He's only had 1 touchdown since week 1. And the target share is kind of all over the place. You know, this week he had 11 of them, but he only went 7 for 70. The previous 3 weeks, you know, he only had 5 to 7 targets. So that's really not going to cut it for where Chris Godwin was going in drafts. But if that means that people are valuing him, you know, down to the 5 for 60 or 7 for 80 type of wide receiver, which isn't a bad wide receiver. We just need to get some touchdowns. You might be able to find yourself a decent wide receiver 2 here in Chris Godwin, or maybe wide receiver 3, or eventually wide receiver 4 prices. If anybody's really, you know, worried or scared of this offense trending towards the Mike Evans, Antonio Brown era. And another factor in that is if Gronk's healthy, there's the rest of the red zone targets, you know, for Mike Evans. That's probably why we've been seeing Mike Evans touchdowns coming in handfuls. No Gronk the last 2 games. So that helps Evans as well for those red zone targets. It'll be interesting to see the balance moving forward, because that's 3 big time wide receivers, and you have to keep them fed, or we know how wide receivers get when they don't get targets.
Let's move on to James Robinson, Jacksonville Jaguars running back. You and I were naysayers throughout the draft process, saying the Jaguars would draft a running back. They drafted a running back. That running back got hurt. And then we kind of flipped. And you and I have talked about throughout the offseason how we thought that the Trevor Lawrence Jaguars offense had a chance to be good. Turns out that was stupid. That was incorrect. The Trevor Lawrence offense is not good in 2021. It will be one day, but it is not in 2021. But the offense being bad has not held back James Robinson in the last 3 weeks. 25.4 against the Cardinals, 20.6 against the Bengals, and 21.7 against the Tennessee Titans. I think that James Robinson is an excellent win now target, because people still have, you know, Travis Etienne in the back of their minds. People still have the concept of, oh, he's on this terrible Jaguars team, so they might worry about, you know, his rushing volume. You know, he's been getting 15 carries, 18 carries, 18 carries, even in losing efforts. I might go out and try and buy some James Robinson, because I think that his current price, like, I think that his win now price is palatable from a long-term perspective.
Most definitely. It goes along kind of the lines of a couple of weeks ago when I said to go buy Daryl Henderson, even with potential for Cam Akers to come back. I feel like Daryl Henderson has shown he is good enough, he can produce well enough, that he'll either A, have a role in LA, or he'll be a starter somewhere else. James Robinson has proven that last year wasn't a fluke. It wasn't just volume getting him by. This team sucks out loud, like real bad. And he's kind of the one shining light. You know, DJ Chark was doing okay until the injury. Laviska Shenault has been pretty bad. He's had one okay game. And Trevor Lawrence has been really underwhelming. I get he's a rookie. It's a young team with a lot of different moving parts. Urban Meyer's out there messing around with 12-year-olds or 20-year-olds, however old she was.
Jesus, damn.
it was bad. One way or another, not great. This team's in shambles. The only person not in shambles, apparently, is the only professional they have in James Robinson. So I do think Robinson holds future value, honestly. He's a great win-now target. You know, like I said, with kind of along the lines of Daryl Henderson, it's honestly probably free money because he's not going to demand a really huge asking price. But he, I mean, he's not going to be free. Let's, you know, we know that. But in regards to RB1s or RB2s, they're few and far in between and really hard to obtain. A lot of teams that are competing probably don't have James Robinson on the roster. So as a contender, you might be able to get your hands on a share.
All right, before we get into rookie or the vet, I want to tell you guys about RotoViz. You hear us talk about it all the time on the podcast. We got the tools like the Game Splits app and the Box Score Scout and everything we mentioned on the podcast and much, much more, way more than we mentioned on the podcast. And you need it in your dynasty life. You need it in your fantasy life. So make sure to go to RotoViz, get yourself 10% off a one-year subscription by applying the discount code RVRadio2021 at checkout. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast for further information. Listen. You need RotoViz. I need RotoViz. You know, llamas need RotoViz. So get your RotoViz on RV Radio 2021.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now it's time for Rookie or the Vet.
Is that the first Rookie or the Vet singing in the new place?
Maybe.
Milestones out here. We're going to have to get a plaque for that or something.
The acoustics are better in this room.
Sounded good.
There you go. Rookie or the Vet in the new guest bedroom. Here we go. Rookie or the Vet. So, for our first rookie vet, we are going to the quarterback position. You may be familiar with that position, Dan. They throw the ball to running backs and wide receivers. So, rookie of the vet for today, it's going to be two guys who have not played well in the year that is 2021. One of them is the veteran Ryan Tannehill, who has been devoid of Julio Jones doing anything, has been devoid of A.J. Brown doing much because he's been injured. And that offense outside of Derrick Henry has been a muddled mess. So who are we pairing Ryan Tannehill with? We are pairing him with Zach Wilson. who has also played very poorly. In week one, he had 18 fantasy points. And in week four, he had 17 fantasy points. But outside of that, hasn't eclipsed the 10 fantasy points mark for Zach Wilson. That's not accurate. What? That's weird. Because there's no way. Oh, yeah, the four interception game was week two. That's what it was. Okay. No, that is accurate. I for some reason, I thought the four interception game was week one. my eyes were broken. Zach Wilson, who disappointed very much in London. In London, he did not come through against a porous Falcons defense. So whether it's the veteran who has struggled or the rookie has struggled, which one of these strugglers are you buying into for Dynasty?
If I'm forced to pick, I'll probably pick one. If I don't have a gun to my head, I'll pass on both. I'm always going to be on the Zach Wilson isn't good train. Going to the Jets doesn't help. He's got a couple of weapons in Corey Davis and Elijah Moore, but I don't see it. When he's out there, it looks like if someone smashed Baker Mayfield and Johnny Manziel together and then put a bandana around their eyes so he couldn't see, and had no idea what was going on. That is Zach Wilson. I don't get it. I never understood what everybody saw. There's always potential in somebody's game. His ceiling is Baker Mayfield, which, okay, great. A middle of the road quarterback in the NFL. Awesome. Super exciting. Now, Ryan Tannehill, on the other hand, we saw last year he could be competent. This year has looked like he borrowed Zach Wilson's blindfold. He's been unbelievably bad, to be completely honest, and kind of a cupcake schedule. Aside from Arizona, we would have expected kind of a clinic to be put on. He had Seattle, Indy, the Jets, and then Jacksonville. And all of them have kind of just been stinkers. Now, we know that Tennessee is a run first, run second, run third. Run fourth, why not? Go for two with the run. That's what they do. They run with Derrick Henry. But we also saw last year that the Tennessee Titans could be at least moderately useful through Ryan Tannehill's arm through the air. That is not the case this year. They're, all over the board, not consistent whatsoever. A.J. Brown hasn't looked right. Julio, I think we're in corpse stage at this point. There's an argument to be made. AJ Green has looked better. It's all over the place. To be honest, I think if I was forced to take one, I'd probably take Tannehill. Just because the offense is more well-rounded and it isn't the New York Jets, but I'm not excited about it. I think if it's based on trade value alone, you're taking Zach Wilson. As far as my trust goes, I would have slightly more faith in Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. You know where I'm usually lean in terms of a veteran versus a rookie, hence the rookie or the vet segment. But outside of a complete rebuild where I'm tearing everything down, I think I'm taking Tannehill here. I think you're more likely to get, high-end QB2, low-end QB1 numbers at some point from Tannehill once A.J. Brown is healthy, once Julio Jones is healthy, once they maybe, give Derrick Henry a breather for a couple minutes. So on the off chance that Tannehill looks more like 2020 Tannehill sometime soon, I'll take him. But, with the caveat that if I'm rebuilding, super rebuilding, I'll take Zach Wilson. Next, we'll go to the running back position. We have Najee Harris versus Antonio Gibson. Najee Harris so far in 2021 has been almost exactly what we thought, except for maybe a little bit more efficient than we were expecting. But even that might be a stretch. Najee Harris is the RB3 on the season so far, tallying 19, 28, 21, and 22 in his last four games after a 5-point game in week one. He's got the touches. Does he have the skill, really, or does it even matter for Najee Harris? So just by starting off, if I was building a football team, I would much rather have Antonio Gibson today, tomorrow, and the next day. But I think I'm going to lean, because I don't run a football team, the Pittsburgh Steelers run a football team, and they are going to be giving Najee Harris like 400 touches per year for the length of his rookie contract. And that is going to be a significant, you know, fantasy output. So I like Gibson. I like Gibson more than Harris, but I wouldn't take Gibson over Harris because of the fact that even in the most volume I see from Gibson, I don't see it matching Harris.
Well, and for a little bit of context, Najee Harris might be RB3, but that's quite literally because he had 24 points from only receiving in week three. He had 14 catches for 102 yards because Big Ben can't throw it further than 6 yards. I'm on the kind of the same boat as you, Nathan. I think if it's me, I'm taking Antonio Gibson. I think he's more versatile. I would say he's lesser between the tackles, but he's significantly better outside in space, catching the football. Not to say that Najee's necessarily bad. Antonio Gibson was the guy that I loved as a pass catcher. I thought he was going to play wide receiver. I didn't rank him highly as a running back because I didn't really see that part in his game. Now, he's gotten better at it, still not necessarily great, let's say, but he's been about as effective between the tackles as Najee Harris has been. Offenses have been kind of somewhat similar, thus far. Obviously, Pittsburgh has been kind of a train wreck, and Washington is probably exceeding expectations a small amount. So I think I'm sticking with Antonio Gibson here, even though Najee Harris really seems like he's the bell cow type, at least in the short term. I don't know if he'll survive the length of his rookie contract based on the number of touches clearly. I just don't see how someone is going to survive that. Whereas Antonio Gibson really only has to survive McKissick leaving town. That's kind of the one hindrance to Antonio Gibson. He's not really used the way I would like him to be used in the passing game, even though he does have a 73-yard touchdown catch this year. But you'd hate to give him more targets than two a game. So I'm going Antonio Gibson.
All right, let's move on to the wide receiver position for Rookie or the Vet. And for this Rookie of the Vet, we have Dolphins rookie wide receiver Jalen Waddle versus Denver Broncos wide receiver Courtland Sutton. What are your thoughts on this one, Dan?
Well, I wasn't really huge on Waddle. I thought he would be kind of a fine, a nice complimentary wide receiver. And Miami's been kind of a train wreck. I think it's kind of hard to pass judgment on Waddle at this stage because he had a very mediocre to bad Tua, followed up by the, you know, whatever's left of Jacoby Brissett. So not necessarily great for wide receivers. He doesn't have Will Fuller working across from him that we were probably hoping to have. So he could be working against some lesser cornerbacks or secondary. The offense as a whole is just kind of all over the place for Waddle. So it's hard to make a real call on him. I think the volume will be there in the short term. I'm just not sure he's got wide receiver one status. And now when you talk about Courtland Sutton, we know Jerry Jeudy is, you know, they're probably both 1As in that offense. I think they're very, very equal. But Jerry Judy's out currently, so it's tough to make that call as well. However, I see a wide receiver one in Courtland Sutton. He screams that. This week, I mean, of all weeks, of course, we are talking about Courtland Sutton in this segment, probably because of this week with Courtland Sutton. He had 11 targets. He went 7 for 120 and one. That is a wide receiver 1 week. He's got another one of those against Jacksonville. He went 9 for 159. The other weeks, he's been very pedestrian. And, you know, to kind of go against Courtland Sutton here, Teddy Bridgewater has looked probably the best he's looked in his career. And this is all really without Jerry Jeudy. So I would have expected Courtland Sutton, and I know he was a little bit injured during a couple of those games, so he's not 100%. But I would have expected Courtland Sutton to absolutely feast. Also having kind of a cupcake schedule here. So I think if your goal was to just gain roster value, it's probably Jalen Waddle. If your goal is long-term points, to be honest, I think it's Cortland Sutton. I think I would take Sutton in that points battle. I think Waddle will be a secondary player for his career. At this point, he's got a tough situation. So we'll see how he comes out of it. It's a lot to put on the line to risk for a guy you don't really know the outcome of.
Yeah, I'm also taking Sutton here because there's just so much uncertainty with Miami in their future. Is Tua the long-term quarterback? And if it is Tua, is that good or bad for Waddle? And in terms of Cortland Sutton, I think that he, in a weird way, has like a volatile week-to-week prospect because of how bad Teddy Bridgewater, or how mediocre Teddy Bridgewater is. On Teddy Bridgewater's bad weeks, whether it's with Judy or not, Sutton's not going to do anything. And on Bridgewater's good weeks, Sutton is going to do what he did with 7 catches for 120 and a touch. So I do think that it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster for people who have Sutton. You know, hopefully I have him as like a wide receiver 3 or wide receiver 4. But in terms of guys going to score points now and a guy who is going to, you know, put up some big games, like I think we're a little bit removed from big games from Waddle. We need a few things to happen for him to be seeing those 7 for 120 in a touch games like with any regularity.
Yeah, I think that's pretty far down the road. It just kind of is what it is. I think obviously, you know, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. You wanted to say he's bad, and then you switched to mediocre. I mean, that's what you're just getting Teddy Bridgewater. He again is just kind of your middle of the road starter. But he's definitely been better this year. He's got a couple of big games under his belt. He's, you know, for him, over 260 yards 3 times is impressive. Is one, you know, not necessarily bad game, but last week we can't count because he got knocked out with a concussion against Baltimore. But the Jets game that was, again, in hand from the first second of the game, they just focused on running the football and they didn't really need Teddy to throw. He only threw it 25 times. So the volume is going to probably be very similar to what Seattle's passing volume is, where you're never really going to go over 40 attempts unless you're playing from behind the entire game. But it's going to be moderately efficient. He's been accurate. His completion percentage has been like 75 or 78%, something like that all year. So I think Teddy is good for the Denver Broncos in the short term. And to be honest, with Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy, I'm not sure it necessarily matters who is at quarterback, as long as it isn't Brock Osweiler again.
And let's wrap up the show with a quick tight end rookie or the vet. We have Tommy Tremble versus Cole Kmet. Neither of these guys have done much so far this year. Kind of expected from Tremble, but we were expecting something from Cole Kmet. I know the Bears offense has been a mess with or without Justin Fields. They haven't really been able to get much going on offense, but they've still won a few games even besides the fact. But Cole Kmet topped out at 9 points in week 1, hasn't done much since. 7 targets, 1, 4, 3, 4 targets. So you're really not trying to get him too involved in the offense, you know, sticking with the wide receivers, I guess, or just the running backs, really. And Tommy Tremble is a guy who I was picking up off waivers post rookie drafts or, you know, during, you know, August cutdown. People are like, okay, I can't roster Tommy Tremble. And his third round draft capital, his collegiate stats as a Notre Dame Fighting Irish were intriguing to me. And granted, he has 6 career targets so far, 6 career targets through 3 games. Through 6 game or 5 games, but all those in the last 3 games. I am a believer, especially at the tight end position, that when you're scoring touchdowns with Tremble, which Tremble has 2, 1 on the ground, 1 through the air, when you're getting touchdowns early in your career, that's going to breed itself into targets that you're going to see. I mean, he had 4 targets this week. He might have 6 targets the next week. So I think that Tremble is going to, you know, become a part of this Panthers offense. I know you love Sam Darnold as much as the world can see. And guess what? Tommy Tremble could be a very solid safety valve for him. Ian Thomas is terrible. I don't know if he's even still on the team. They traded Dan Arnold because they're so confident in Tommy Tremble. So Kmet hasn't shown me enough. He was second round pick, but he's old. I'm taking Tremble out of Notre Dame, who I believe is also like 20 years old. Yes, he just turned 20 one in June.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of alluded to the big reason why I will take Tommy Tremble here as well. Even though I do hate Blockhead Darnold, it doesn't really matter because the Carolina Panthers seemingly love Tommy Tremble. Like you mentioned, the third round pick. The second they moved Dan Arnold, who seemed competent at the very least, that just showed that they had all the faith in the world in Tommy Tremble. Now, it's not like they traded Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz or Antonio Gates or one of these great, you know, tight ends or something like that. But they did trade their starter because they were able to lean on and trust Tommy Tremble in that role. So the playing time has only gone up. The targets, we will hope, will get there. But I think we know for a fact he's going to be on the field. He's going to be installed in these packages. And even though they have DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson has been non-existent, let's say. Terrace Marshall, up-and-comer. Tommy Tremble is probably going to have a role in this offense. I don't necessarily think he's going to have tight end one status, which isn't super hard to obtain, but even to get there value-wise can be tough. I do think in the short term, though, I mean, he can sneak very easily into that tight end two conversation. Value-wise, he's probably already in there. As far as points go, I think it's going to take a little bit to find some consistency. But like you mentioned, early touchdowns are big for tight ends, something that I kind of look for as well. It usually leads to usage. If you can find the end zone, why not get you the ball a little bit more? So, Tremble pretty easily for me. I was never on the Cole Kmet train. I laughed at people last year when they were drafting Cole Kmet over a bunch of actually talented players in fantasy drafts, especially in like tight end premium leagues. So, or 2 years ago, whenever he got drafted, doesn't even matter because he's not good. Tommy Tremble, one of few tight ends I'll speak positively about.
Alrighty, that should wrap us up for this evening. We'll talk to you guys next week. Once again, promo code RV Radio 2021.